And welcome to Courage Cocktail Radio Show. I'm your host, Leanne McClymont. Glad you could join us today. Are you ready for your cocktail? Well, remember what Courage Cocktail is all about, finding new medicine for vexing problems. Your Courage Cocktail today features an organization that champions creative recycling and reuse. We visit the Scrap Exchange, the premier organization in North America, and dare I say the world, for creative recycling and reuse, based in none other than Durham, North Carolina. In our studio today are three devoted and brilliant minds who run the Scrap Exchange. Joining us are Anne Woodward, Executive Director, Ruth Warren, Manager of Communications, and Shelley LaPointe, Education Outreach Director. I might have just given you a raise. I'm not sure with that title. Now, before we open up all the mics and we get to learn more about what this group of amazing women are doing, I thought we should get going for an audio tour. That means we need our transporter music. We are heading over to Durham, North Carolina. It is not far from Carrboro, but it is a world apart from anything I've seen. Take a listen to this three-minute track. It is a tour de force of a floor walk at the Scrap Exchange. Listen first, transport yourself into these talented women's workspaces, and then you'll see why this Courage Cocktail has a distinctly delightful flavor. Let's wander through. We're now in the Cameron Gallery, listening to what people are doing here. Those are beer caps. Plastic tubes, actually cardboard carton tubes. These look like Lego pieces. They're actually industrial discards. Now we're over to fill a bag. Buttons and beads, large and small. Check this out. Millions of buttons. Millions. And this is called the gemstone. This is kind of like a William Burroughs act. Let's see if Naked Lunch is around here.
Yeah, about normal.
No.
Well, over here, there are used USB cables. Now we're over the rug supply. Rug samples. And do you get the feeling? I know that was a ton of sounds, but I figured we all better get in the framework, appropriate mindset, before we start learning about what it is that's really going over there. So ladies, I want to thank you again for joining me today. I'm going to ask who's going to lead off. It would be Anne. Anne, help me out here. Can you help us explain this place?
Sure. Thanks for having us, Leanne. So the Scrap Exchange is a creative reuse art center, and as you heard in the audio, there's all kinds of different materials that we collect. We collect about 100 tons of waste from going to the landfill annually, and that's part of how we operate, is we really get these materials from manufacturers, we get them from residents, we get them from businesses, local businesses, from schools, basically any place that is throwing something away that can be creatively reused, we try and collect those materials.
But the thing that blew me away, and listener, if you are a local listener, you just got to promise me you'll find the time to go to the Scrap Exchange. But it's the largeness of it all. It's like this, I have this idea, it's the vast republic of everything. How did that happen? Maybe the best thing is to help me explain or learn about the history of your organization and the many locations where you are now and where you are now.
Sure. The organization was started in 1991 by a woman named Chris Rosenthal and some community members, and she was the founder of an Australian organization called the Reverse Garbage Truck. So basically, she's Australian, and she ended up moving to the United States, and coincidentally in Durham, and just duplicated the operations again. And basically, what it started out to be is providing educators low-cost resources for their classrooms and their students. So that really has been, that's our history, that's our legacy, and that is really core to our mission and something that we still do. And we started out in Northgate Mall in a small space in the front part of the mall, and then we moved to a little bit larger space in the back part of the mall. And in 2000, we moved downtown to Liberty Warehouse and was an arts anchor there for about 11 years until the roof collapsed in that particular warehouse. And we relocated almost overnight to East Durham, to Golden Belt, to Cordoba Center for the Arts, and increased our retail space and our gallery space from 8,000 square feet to 22,000 square feet. And so we really scaled during that time in 2011 is when that happened. And then for the past 8 years, part of our goal has been to purchase our own location, to have ownership of our own building so we could steward the organization and have a facility that embodies our mission, which is living reuse everywhere you turn. So in 2014, we purchased the Lakewood Theater building. It was built as the Lakewood Theater in 1966. And then Duke Surplus took it over and renovated the theater into a surplus store. So it does have that legacy in there as well. And that is a 23,000 square foot building that is on 2.5 acres. So now we have moved there. We've been there since last August. And we are so excited to be in our new facility and to really just figure out how to develop it related to the community. We've put out basketball courts in the back where we've got a community garden club that's been meeting to steward the outside grounds of it. I like sculpture parks. I used to live right down the street from Socrates Sculpture Park in Queens, which is sort of a best practice of sculpture parks. Yeah. So I think about that when we're developing that space as well. And we're thrilled to own something, and we're thrilled to really, once again, embody our mission of reuse and to have people come and visit us and see that in front of them.
And it's an unbelievable experience. There's no question. It's a big white building. It feels like it's a flat building. It's not a towered building, but it's a high-roofed building. And I love what you said about Chris Rosenthal's idea of the reverse garbage truck. Yeah. We have a ton of listeners now in Australia. Welcome to you, all of you. You found us, seems like 2 weeks ago, from the beautiful Spoonflower community. So it's odd, but your sister in spirit has showed up again today on Courage Cocktail. So let's go back to a few of the fun things that I'm hearing and I'm learning. You know, this material, this physical wall, this brick and mortar stuff, means that you own the building. And so you've been in business for a heck of a long time, right? how many years?
24 years. Golly, in April.
That's amazing.
Yeah, next month.
Next month. Okay. So now you've realized finally, you know, we are no longer renters. Boom. We own our property. And now you seem to be able to anchor to that community that you're in as an arts anchor. And that in and of itself is a remarkable accomplishment. Sometimes it just seems that the environments around your places have a history of, how shall I say, gentrification, just kind of shaping into a beautiful, beautiful community. So you have your reuse and recycling on all spectrums.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, you saying that makes me think the building that we moved into was abandoned for 3 years, and it's part of a shopping center that is centrally located in Durham. And it's part of a strip mall, and I would say over a quarter of the strip mall is abandoned as well. So us coming in and being open, we're open 7 days a week, 10 to 7. We are an economic arts and cultural machine. You know, we're just open all the time. We're like the public library, as our operations manager Phoebe says. And we also have an art gallery where we exhibit artists who are using these materials in their artwork. And we also have our hands-on creative art programs that happen on site. So we've extended our design center, and our design center is, you know, I'm such a data person, it's probably 3,000 square feet now. We have industrial sewing machines and sergers and 130 classes annually where our community artists are teaching community members skills and different techniques on using the materials.
And I couldn't have created or written or scripted a better segue, because right now I'm going to play a small track. It's less than a minute long. You'll hear a mother's voice talking to these two young girls. They're about 15, maybe 13. And why this profile is in our Courage Cocktail today is to help you listen and hear the voices of your beloved shoppers. Listen to this. And if you could hear it, it was a woman speaking about honeybees, hanging birds over a piece of something that she was buying. She was just floating on air when she came into the display of old championship things, trophies. There's a trophy display that you guys recycle. And she was using that as a bird, way to attract birds and bees. It was absolutely delightful, wow. which kind of reminds me, and it may be a great segue for Shelley. Shelley, you are in charge of all of these education programs. A few minutes ago, Anne was telling us that there's over 136 programs each year.
That's just our creative classes. We actually have approximately 600 educational events each year. And that includes our creative classes, birthday parties, workshops, which we hold both on-site and bring to local schools and after-school programs, as well as outreach events. And we take our outreach staff to festivals, events, concerts, all different kinds of community-wide events throughout the Southeast, 4 states. So about 600 a year.
So when you say you're going to 4 states, what do you do? Do you visit? What do you do on these events?
Well, it's quite a sight to see. When we go to an outreach event, we pack a large van full of our blue barrels full of materials. And I'm sure that you saw our blue barrels when you were at the scrap exchange. Well, we pack our van full of blue barrels and then drive our scrap exchange van to wherever the event happens to be. So for example, this Saturday, we're gonna be at Raleigh St. Patrick's Day Parade. So you'll see our van and our blue barrels, and our trained staff members come with our materials, and then participants at these events are able to make a project following their own creative process, using the materials we have, and those projects vary tremendously. Just yesterday, I had a young child make a telescope that he could use with 3 friends, so it was a 3-person telescope.
It was a tri-telescope. All right. So I'm getting a picture here that you're not just tethered to that property. You guys travel, right? You guys move. You guys put your act, take your gig on the road and bring it into other places. So there's some thread here that connects the dots, and that is you're really raising an awareness among people about, wait a minute, maybe this isn't junk. Maybe just because I'm not using it now or somebody else isn't using it, somebody else cannot use it or may be needing it. So can you help explain this and chime in? How do you get to that heart of creative recycling and reuse? We might ask Ruth Warren over there, the communications director. They're all like, oh, that's a biggie, Leanne.
Can you repeat the question?
Sure, I can repeat the question. Ruth, take a stab at this one. What is the heart and soul of creative reuse?
Well, really what it is being able to look at materials in a different way, and that they don't just have a finite lifespan, but really it's more that once you are finished with their intended purpose, it is not something necessarily that needs to go in the trash. It's something that can be reworked into something else. And perhaps during that reworking process, you end up with discards off the thing, cutaways of some sort. You can take those and remake them into something else. And so it's just raising the awareness that all the materials around us, we live in a world that's so heavy in materials and manufacturing and stuff. It seems like we're drowning in stuff all the time. And what we do is just try to raise the awareness of all those around us that, you know, this stuff, we don't have to buy something new every single time. We can, you know, take what we have, reuse it, extend the life a little bit longer, turn it into something else, create art out of it, you know, make something utilitarian out of it. It's when you get right down to it, it's just a material, and how can we manipulate that material further? And so that's kind of what we're trying to you know, pass on to others, whether it's through our in-store programming, whether it's through our outreach programming, our boot camp programming, our summer camp programming. All of this is just to share this awareness that we don't have to continue to add to the, you know, crushing amount of stuff in this world. We can take the stuff that we have and continue to reuse it.
Well, beautifully spoken, and almost I felt like I was in the presence of an evangelical minister. And I say that, believe me, with a deep sense of respect. You are inspired, and I can listen to each voice here this morning and or now this afternoon. But you said something there that I'd like a little bit more information about, and that is this whole recycling thing. You're tangential in many ways to the recycling communities, to raising awareness. These blue buckets that Shelley was talking about, these are 50-gallon buckets approximately. They're blue, they're plastic, they've probably been used for 100 years, or if they are that old. But they usually have buckets of stuff. I happen to make a soundtrack of the beer caps. Beer caps from bottles. But there are all kinds of other things. And one of those things was industrial discards. What is an industrial discard? And how did you find it? We'll turn to Anne for this one.
So industrial discards are specifically things that come from manufacturers and businesses, and I call it factory fresh. So we have a relationship with the business, and we'll go to a zipper company, and we've already talked to them. We've already been on their production floor. We've already seen what they make, and we know that they have, let's say, 4 large boxes of zippers left over a week because there's something wrong with them that they can't resell it or reuse it in whatever it is they're doing. So we have a relationship with them where we have a collection service that goes out to about 165 businesses annually and picks up as part of this collection process. So we've really pinpointed industries like hosiery mills and the zipper factory, lace factory. We go to pharmaceutical companies. We've got a really large biotechnical industry in Research Triangle Park. So we'll go and help the National Institute of Environmental Health Services clean out a lab after they've done their testing. And all that stuff has never, you know, they ordered all the materials for the lab to do the testing and they're done. They have excess materials that have never been used as part of the laboratory exercise and or research. And so we'll go and clean out the lab and bring all the materials to the organization. And so we're reselling all of these materials. And I have to say, I'm going to do a little plug for our mission, which
Please
is
do.
To promote creativity, environmental awareness, and community through reuse. And the industrial discards are really a very large component of that activity.
You know, I listen to this, and it's so enlightening. But this the idea that you have 160 businesses, manufacturing businesses, I'm going to shout it out in the state of North Carolina. Maybe it's the whole Southeast. But
we go to five counties.
You go to five counties.
In North Carolina, basically, to collect the materials.
And one of the strangest things that I saw there was, in a blue bucket, there were these round chunks that were circular, and they had metal inside them, and they were a little ornamental. And I think it was Ruth that explained to me, but I forget what they were. They were beautiful.
They are a product of transmission testing. So there are slivers of pieces of car transmissions, vehicle transmissions, that have been shaved off and encased in this sort of plastic or acrylic. I'm not quite sure what that particular material is. Anyway, during their testing process, That's what they come up with, and how the testing process works, I have no idea, or how this piece, but that's where it comes from. And we get a lot of, you know, this really kind of arcane, unusual materials that come from these kind of processes.
Well, you know, there will be pictures. I have pictures. I probably, if there were films, rolls of films, you're all maybe too young to know what a roll of film is, but I probably shot over 100 pictures. So you'll all see that on Facebook, and hopefully I got to grab that particular piece. But the issue that I'm shooting for here is to bring alive the notion that you don't even know what recyclable goods may be, look like, where they may come from, and how valuable it is to not throw them into the landfill, or I don't even know, worse, perhaps burn them. I have no idea what would have happened to them. Ruth, do you know?
Well, I just wanted to, you know, add one more thing, and that's that what happens with materials once we are, you know, traditionally done with them for their first use, is people have a number of options, you know, and we provide a more sustainable option, of course, by taking them, being able to reuse them. But one thing that people do is recycle. We're not a recycling place. The recycling is, you know, you had Muriel on a few weeks ago to talk about the recycling industry. We are a reuse industry, and recycling in and of itself would be a step that might be after us. If we cannot, you know, handle it in any way, then perhaps recycling would be a way to do it. But we are, you know, the better, more sustainable, better for the economy, better for the environment, is to reuse it first before you actually recycle it.
Got it. That's an important clarification. So the question is this, and I don't know who could answer this, what's the hottest item that you've had in your 23,000 square foot facility that you get and it just rushes out the door?
Well, in our educational programs, I don't even have to think about this.
What is it?
It is our thread cones.
What are they?
So if you think about thread manufacturing for like industrial clothes, you have these big, huge, I don't even know what to call them, bolts of thread, spools of thread, and they come on cardboard cones, kind of like a paper towel roll, except it's for thread.
Okay.
And they're absolutely beautiful, and it really hits home to me the importance of industrial discards for imagination and developing imagination, because they're beautiful, they're striped, or they have bees on them, or they have leaves on them, just stamped on them, and honestly, they would be discarded if we didn't have someone going frequently, Daniel, to go and pick them up and bring them to scrap exchange. And the kids then, and adults, and teenagers, use them for all different kinds of projects. So you have this kind of blank material, which would have been wasted. And kids can impress upon it or project upon it onto this material, onto this thread cone, so many different kinds of things. That's what became the basis for the telescopes yesterday. It also became a tree.
Now, what are you serving these kids to drink? I just mothers, I'll get to the bottom of it.
They frequently become vases for repurposed plastic flowers. They get wrapped with beads or tied with fabric. The thoughtfulness and the way that these discards, industrial discards, the imagination that is projected upon them through the creative process, it is really humbling and amazing to watch kids.
Hold on now. Listen to this. I have another soundtrack, and it steps right into applause. So you might just turn your volume down, but it's a birthday party, and that will be a great, great introduction to that next generation. Check it out. Can you imagine? They are so excited to be there. I had, 3 minutes of that track, and I decided, it's enough already to just get that palpable interest. But is there something that the children are learning here that's so exciting? Tell me about it, Shelley.
Well, they're gaining many, many skills, both through our workshops and also through our birthday parties. And these skills are skills like problem solving. They get a variety of materials, which range in our make and take room from the thread cones that I just described to CDs, to little plastic flowers, to rubber bands. And then they get to imagine in their minds something that they would like to create. And then they just set right about creating it. And through that process, they're going to succeed in some areas. They're not going to succeed in others. They have to redirect their thinking. They have to change their plan. They have to be adaptable and resourceful. So they have to persevere. They have to have stamina. You know, it's fun because their imagination and their creativity is guiding them. And yet they're gaining all of these key skills that they then bring back into their educational environments, formal educational environments.
Right, like the telescope, the tri-telescope there. I hope you got a picture of that. All right, so here we are. We're in the midway section of our radio program. And we will resume this conversation. We tend to take a wee bit of an introduction to what's going on in the neighborhood. But when we return, we have a remarkable voice that is not in the room. His name is Henry. Stay tuned.
WCOM, your all-volunteer community radio station in Carrboro, needs your support. Do you have an idea for a radio show? How about an interest in engineering or a computer background? Are you interested in fundraising or just meeting a group of wonderful people? Please consider a donation of time or money to support this gem of the community. To find out more, please visit our website, WCOMFM.org. To make a financial contribution, sponsor your favorite show, or help support our many featured news and information programs, click the PayPal donate button at the top of our main page. Again, please visit our website, WCOMFM.org, and thanks for listening to your community radio station. Thank you.
Welcome back to Courage Cocktail Radio Show. I'm your host, Leanne McClymont. I'm thrilled you're with me. If you are just tuning in, welcome. We have guests on from the Scrap Exchange. That's www.scrapexchange.org. And I wanted to shout that out now and many times for the second half of the show. Our guests include the executive director, Anne Woodward, Shelley LaPointe, who is the director of education and outreach, and also Ruth Warren, who's our communications manager. Thank you all for joining us today. Now, while we have been talking about recycling, reuse, creative reuse, which is what Ruth helped me understand very clearly now, we've been promoting the show throughout 2015. Now, I know it's mid-March. We started talking about the Scrap Exchange early in January. We ran a program with none other than the Countess of Creative Reuse and Recycling, and that is the beloved Muriel Willimon. Muriel, I hope you're out there. This is a big shout out to you and your remarkable team at the Orange County Waste Management Services. I also want to say she's super busy now with the composting issues, more organic products, and hopefully she's going to come back and tell us how that all went. But I do want to pick up a certain thread to our stories. Let me give you a little background. Many times now, I actually go visit on site, and sometimes I go twice, and I grab those sounds, and I happen to get those sounds in early February. Well, as I was walking around, I had the opportunity to go up to the cashier and start talking about some books and stuff that he was selling, which will be talked about later on in the show. But all of a sudden, I started to listen, and he knew I was interested. So I'd like you all to listen to this track. This is Henry of the Scrap Exchange.
Hey, I'm Leanne. I'm kind of interested in joining this thing called the Friends Club.
Sure,
Leanne. Can you help
me out? Sure. So the Friends Club at the Scrap Exchange is a way for consumers to save money. So at the Scrap Exchange, we offer a discounted membership for those people who are students, teachers, faculty, clergy, member of the military, or live more than 50 miles away. So that brings it down from $40 a year to $30 a year. Now, I said a year. So for 1 year, you save 20% off for each purchase. Plus, on special store wide holidays, for instance, Super Sunday, the last Sunday of every month, you would save 30% off your entire purchase.
Wow.
You also get 2 free passes to our make and take room, where you, your friends, your family, or your children can create for an hour and a half with all materials provided.
And that's for free.
And that is for free. Included in your either regular or discounted membership price. We also have Academic Amigos, where 10 teachers each pay $10 for a full Friends Club membership. We also have our lifetime membership for those who truly want to give back to the Scrap Exchange, where for the rest of your life, for $1,000, you can be a Friends Club member.
And what is your name again?
My name's Henry. And if you want to sign up online, you can do that as well. Uh-huh. Just mention my name and enjoy shopping at the Scrap Exchange. It's important for all of our customers to have a scrappy day.
I made my guests say, wait for it, wait for it. It's important for all of our guests to have a scrappy day. I couldn't give a human being walking on the face of the earth enough money to speak with that amount of passion about any topic in any city, hands down. Henry, I hope you're tuned in there. You made me. You've converted me. I am a friend of the Scrap Exchange on the site. In fact, he even knows this, and I feel very honest in telling you this. I generally leave my wallet and stuff in the car. Yeah, now I'm telling the world this. When I go in, because I have so much other gear, but I actually went back to my car and came in to make the deal. He was so powerful. And I needed the community here at large and communities abroad. You know, our radio show, we're very blessed. We've got some remarkable talent, local talent, that we try to showcase. And our local communities recognize this, but the power of your spirit is really so transferable to many other communities. So I'd like us to think about in the second half of the show, and Shelley, you will cheer in, but I really want to talk about the idea of reuse, the idea of repurposing in a far bigger stage. Anne, help me out here. What's going on next week over at your shop?
I love that question, Leanne. We like to think big where we work. Next week we're doing a boot camp, and we invite people from around the world to come and spend 3.5 days with us and basically learn every part of our operations, from finances to budget to model. You know, we are a nonprofit model, but there's different models out there related to creative reuse. There's for-profit model like Urban Ore in California. There's a multi-agency government model, which is like Materials for the Arts, run by Department of Cultural Affairs in New York City. There's other nonprofit models that actually have franchise operations like Scrap USA and Scrap Portland. And Scrap Exchange considers ourselves a national model. I think we are the largest, and we have a very good sustainable operations on the whole. So we really want to teach other communities how to do this in their city. There's only about 60 creative reuse art centers throughout the United States, and they're only in about 13 states. So it's actually very rare to have a creative reuse center in your neighborhood. And there are so many nonprofits, schools, prisons, hospitals, daycare centers, senior centers that need access to low-cost resources. So if you're able to set up systems of deferring the materials and putting it in the hands of some other distribution system that can get those materials out to the community, which is essentially what we do. We're really all about just taking these materials. There's 230,000 tons of solid waste thrown away in Durham County alone, 9 million tons in North Carolina. You know, that's just one example of a state that has a lot of garbage and waste. And every state is like this, and every city is like this. So it's really important to have many different systems for collecting those materials. It's resource recovery. It's community development. It's unlimited resources for teachers. You never hear those, all of those words together in one sentence, which is why I love to say it.
Unlimited resources for teachers. I'm going to break out in a rash. You're absolutely, you nailed it for us. It's creative reuse. You said the following, that there are about 60 U.S. centers, U.S., and am I going to say contiguous U.S., or am I going to include Puerto Rico and Hawaii here?
Yeah, you can include them as well.
And Alaska.
Yes.
Okay. quick question for you then. What do you do, Anne or Shelley or Ruth, if you're not in one of those 13 states? What do you do? If people listen to this radio show all over the country, and in 16 countries, so I'm very interested. We'll pick up the thread of who else is visiting you next week. But the short-term question is, what do you do?
Well, I think it depends on what it is you are doing. If you're making art and you are looking for materials that are affordable to make your artwork or product, then you're going to be sourcing materials in different ways. I mean, this is where the reuse economy comes in. You know, you can look at thrift stores. You can look at, let's say, Habitats for Humanities. You can look at places that sort of have leftovers or overages that sell low-cost raw materials. Okay. And that's sort of how, I mean, I used to have a business making handbags from industrial discards, and I sourced all of my materials from the Scrap Exchange. So, you know, we're creating small businesses with this activity as well. So if you're an entrepreneur and you're looking for materials, you can do it that way. Art teachers are one of the most resourceful. Teachers in general are so resourceful, and they're always looking anywhere for different materials. So every business has something left over as part of their production process, and we actually have a formalized reuse arts education document that helps people take this to their community. So a frame shop will have mat board and frames and glass left over. A sign shop will have colorful sticky paper left over that is really good for small motor skills and young children to work with. So, you know, those are just two businesses. Every city has one of those businesses that you can walk in and talk to the owner, talk to whoever's working there, and see if you can start sourcing materials from them. And most of the times they'll give you those materials for free.
What do you think, Shelley? What have you learned?
I'm constantly amazed at the resourcefulness of our customers, and I think that the Scrap Exchange and our mission and our work really fosters this and has helped do exactly what his mission said, which is promote community through reuse. I have teachers that come in. I have also worked in the store, in the retail store, who are interested in helping their preschoolers to gain dexterity. So they look through our zippers, which we have, 8,000 zippers.
The zipper exchange. I don't know, this is going on the dark side. Take me there.
To find the ones that have the loosest tines, or maybe a zipper with the right kind of handle. So people, because the scrap exchange exists, and because it has existed for 24 years, people in Durham and in our region think reuse first. How can I accomplish my goal using materials that I either have around me at my house, or can repurpose something from the scrap exchange or from somewhere else? That we have fostered this thoughtfulness about our resources and about our materials and about problem solving and resourcefulness just by our existence and our work through our educational programs and through our donations and our retail store.
I can't imagine what the zippers really, that collection does, but I can imagine what it would be to know now that I was interviewing a remarkable woman who started the North Carolina Alzheimer's Foundation. Her name is Alice Watkins. Stay tuned for that show. That will be blowing you away, coming up in early June. Well, Alice told me something about Montessori learning. She's saying Montessori learning now affects people in onset Alzheimer's. It helps them. It soothes them. It brings them back. And a lot of Montessori's hands-on materials, it's tactile. And so I'd love to see that connection somehow made to your community, to our broader community as well.
Actually, it's already happening.
Oh, my gosh. Tell me about it.
We had some people who were in working with Alzheimer's patients. Mm-hmm. That was their profession. And they had come to Scrap Exchange to make products based on texture and materiality for their patients. And so we walked through the store and we found pom-poms and ribbons and tassels. And these were just things that had been donated to Scrap Exchange from fabric manufacturers or fabric stores. And they find their way to Scrap Exchange, and then they're used to help people who are struggling. We also have recently initiated a new educational program called Very Special Arts, and it is a 3-class series. This one is art projects for those with adults with visual impairment, and they are going to be exploring and making exploring texture and making sculpture using materials from Scrap Exchange. And the emphasis is going to be on tactile and texture and thinking about the textures of the items we have. We had this wonderful tour of audio Scrap Exchange. Now imagine textural, tactile Scrap Exchange.
I love the way you threw that back at me, darling. Shelley, you can co-host anytime you want. But I think we're driving to the right heart here. We're driving right to the core issue, which is, you know, there's all kinds of places where you're promoting community. You're promoting people who need to use you, need you as much as you need them. My delicious experience, including Henry, but even before I met Henry, and I have a scrappy day, was the names of the places inside your building before the hour is over. You have to tell us. Will somebody please tell me all the names of the rooms and what they are and what's going on there? We'll leave it to Ruth.
Okay, I can talk to that a little bit. We've got the make and take room.
The make and take room.
Which is exactly what it sounds like. You can go in, you can make anything you want with materials that we provide, once again, in our very iconic blue barrels. And you can spend 90 minutes in there, or as much time as you want, making whatever comes into your mind, and you can take it home. And so that's our make and take room. We have our design center. And our design center is also a kind of open studio environment where you can come in and it's like open studio of a more grown-up experience, so you can have but it applies to kids as well. But we have sewing machines. We have equipment in there that is open, that the community can come in and use. So we have die-cut machines and sewing machines, and Anna talked about this a little bit earlier. We have what has affectionately been known for years as our Mongo Room.
The Mongo Room, M-O-N-G-O. Mm-hmm. And it's like a gorilla. What's the Mongo Room?
The Mongo Room is where a lot of stuff goes that doesn't have
a label?
Yeah, it's kind of a little bit of everything. It's the industrial stuff. It's the tiles. It's the electronic stuff. It's the, you know, some of the household stuff that we might have.
It's the trophy room.
It is. We do have a fair amount of trophies in there. Quite a few came from my family as well as I was cleaning out my house. So
you didn't hear it here, kids. Mom. Oh, dear.
And let's see what else. We have our Cameron Gallery, of course, and our Cameron Gallery is our art gallery that is dedicated to showcasing artists who create from reclaimed materials. And it is named after Danny Cameron, who has been a longtime supporter of the organization and who whose foundation was quite pivotal in helping us towards being able to make the building purchase. And we have named the gallery in honor of his work with us. We also have a new the wooden workshop space that we're still kind of, you know, trying to nail down. It's a new program we have, and we're trying to nail down the name for that. But that's going to be a part of the building, like the design studio, but have more kind of industrial woodworking kind of stuff. So we'll have saws and lathes and, you know, all sorts of things.
I'm so happy you brought that up, because it's not just a girl's place. Mm-mm. You know, it's so funny. I was really expecting to see, like, oh, these are going to be pillow-making classes. Oh, my gosh. Not that I have anything against that. In fact, that's like something that I often find myself looking at. But it's not. It's a deep community. It's stuff that includes, you know, heavy lifting. There were a ton of guys and their sons there the day I went. They were looking at the old electronics refuse. There was just a lot of surprises for me. And speaking of surprises, I'm sitting here. As you know, I became a member of the Scrap Club. I'm a friend. And there were these little cards that came in the mail, and it says, I love scraps. And then there's this other thing called Admit One, which is open studio and stuff. So there's, you want people not only to be online, but you want us to come and visit you. Mm-hmm. Is there an online business here that I think about? Do people ever buy your stuff online?
They do. We have an eBay store, and we also have a web store on our website. And so the eBay store has been going for 6 or 7 years now. Mm. And going back to what you said about Australia, our model coming from there, when we first opened our eBay store, one of our very first customers, I think our very first customer was an Australian customer, followed quite soon after that by a New Zealand customer. So that part of the world really gets it.
They get it, sure.
Yes. And then we have a web store, which is newer. We just kicked that off last fall. Mm-hmm. And it is where we are developing what we call our Scraps to Go programming. And our Scraps to Go is going to be where people can go that perhaps are not in the Southeast region, that we can't, you know, necessarily send an events by the truckload to, but they want to have, you know, a scrap exchange experience at their event, whether it's large or small. So with our the stuff on our web store and Scraps to Go, they'll be able to, you know, order their scrap exchange experience. So they can order the materials and we'll ship it to them, and they can do their own little scrap exchange make and take festival experience.
What I love about that is that it is hands-on. It's very tactile. Mm-hmm. You know, when Shelley, the education director, was describing, you know, the sense of pom-poms and tassels and all this tactile texture stuff, you know, our kids and myself included spent a ton of time in a screen, you know, in the click, point, drag, send emails, very digitalized. It's very non-neuroaesthetic. There's nothing really exciting about touching a pad or even an on-screen thing. So I'm starved when I see things like that rug sample. I was all over that. And I can imagine other human beings are just like me. They want to know what things feel like and not get in trouble. Like it, sometimes at fancier stores, you can't go over and touch the goods. At your place,
you can touch everything. Yeah.
I know that time is precious for all of us, and I was hoping to thread one more question to you, Anne, and that is, we're talking about a global stage here, and sure, you can say to me, I think big, I think deep. I have a feeling that the most important thing that you're doing isn't just bringing stuff reused and creative reuse and reclamation, but you're changing our relationship with materials. And the global world must be in need of this as well. It's not just the United States. Tell me who's coming next week. Are there really a lot of people from other places?
Yeah. Next week we have 4 boot camp participants, and one's from Fayetteville, North Carolina. She really wants to start a creative reuse center in her community because she tells me that there's just not a lot happening there. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of bad stuff happening, and we need good stuff happening in our community. I mean, basically, that is really her motivation, is to have alternatives for things for kids and kids to do specifically, really. That's her focus. Wonderful. Which I love. We have a woman coming from Kansas who right now she's running a program with special people with special needs. So she wants this as an add-on to her already robust program of offering resources and services to folks with special needs. And this is really a great, it's a great program to have that as part of this, because you, once again, the tactile part of it, you're touching things, you're processing materials, you're in a positive environment. There's no right or wrong usually with these materials, and that's also another really good part of it. You know, we always use this phrase, you don't have to speak English, you don't even have to speak to enjoy any of the materials. So, and we have a couple more folks coming, you know, for different reasons, really to put these centers in their communities as a positive way to collect resources to create jobs. I mean, that is really, you know, when you talk about poverty alleviation and what are the number one things you need to do to alleviate poverty, it's create stable households and give people jobs. So last year we issued 78 W-2s. We have 12 full-time people. We have 22 part-time staff.
That's a big staff for you, Anne.
It is a big staff. And yeah. We, you know, we just went out to Oregon last week to meet with the Cascade Alliance, and they're looking for 10 partners in 10 cities.
What is that?
I'm still learning about it, but St. Vincent de Paul in Oregon has 13 thrift stores, and Terry McDonald, who's the executive director, who has grown his program and created affordable housing for community members and stable jobs through 470 jobs through his thrift stores and earned income. They have recently, actually they're on their second grant cycle of Robert Wood Johnson Foundation funding. Sure. And really their trajectory and their mission is to create these 10 partnerships in 10 cities and to create jobs through waste. And that is, and when you talk about reuse, you can create so many jobs through waste because it really is a hands-on activity. It's a very process-intensive activity.
It needs a human touch. I call that high def. Yes. You know, it's a high def, high touch. Certain people I know are very high touch. You really need to make sure that they're okay. And this industry requires that. And it's probably a lower level skill, but it's still necessary.
That's right.
Amazing. So when you think about all that's going on, are there final thoughts for you, any one of you, each one of you, as I wrap up the show?
Well, I'll just reiterate, this is Anne again, that I think this should be in every city. I think municipalities should be involved with the general services that it provides, you know, really deferring these materials from going to the landfill or a transfer station and then putting it in the hands of community members and other nonprofits and prisons and hospitals and daycare centers and senior centers. It really hits every single demographic. It doesn't just hit one demographic. It affects your entire community. So making sure that you have good distribution systems and having your community access to low-cost resources and how that happens. I mean, a public school system could actually take a piece of our model and put this in their own school system. It doesn't have to be a nonprofit, but you can adapt this to different parts of, you know, I used to work for the government, so I go back to municipal activity, local activity, statewide activity, national activity, and really just putting reuse in the conversation instead of recycling. You know, talk about, when you talk about reuse, you are talking about feeding people, sheltering people, furnishing their houses, you know, basic needs, putting clothes on their back. When you talk about recycling, you're talking about drinking a soda and then throwing that can in a bin, and then a for-profit company comes and picks it up and adds all these chemicals to actually downcycle what it is that you consumed. So it is a different industry that we're talking about. It's a different animal. And I want people to understand that too.
And I think you're on your way. I have got to close out the show. I'm so grateful for each and every one of you, not only for brewing today's Courage Cocktail, but for holding your space, for being there, for teaching us about promoting community, for teaching us about promoting this awareness in reuse, creative reuse, and its different and its distant cousin called recycling. But we won't confuse the two. And Shelley, you are genius to help those kids and everyone across the demographic learn from being in your community. So listeners, before we close out, I want to tell you, curious about upcoming shows, you bet. We're going to have a ukulele band March 25th. Stay tuned for that one. Also, we're going to take a little serious side. We're going to be reviewing the UNC athletic program's problems, UNC Chapel Hill's issues, and some of the extremely important solutions that are underway to resolve them. Stick around. That's going to be a demonstration of our restorative narrative journalism that we have been doing all along, but we're naming it now. And finally, as always, I want to thank you for joining me today. You bring the lunch, and I'll bring the Courage Cocktail. Thanks for listening.